Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
Me, Ben Hobson.
And me, Jane Maguire.
Today we're speaking with Paralympian Cadina Cox. You are back, Jane. People
back.
Thought you'd left.
How are we, guys? How are we? It's been a while.
Very well.
I've gone really far away from my mic. I've forgotten how to podcast.
Gone down a well.
Gone down a well. Sorry, I'm here.
She's forgotten. She goes, you know, a few weeks out, she's completely forgotten what to do.
Yeah, what's the mic?
And this
what's
is why, people. This is why we should just get rid. No.
I'd love that would be how you tell. This is Jane's last episode. And yeah.
It was about mic. Ultimately, it was the mic technique that was her undoing.
Yeah, it was. The fact she forgot her dodgy internet connection and her mic were the reasons we let her go.
What have you been up to, Jane? Have you been joy planning?
I have been joy planning. I've been, do you know what? I've taken the joy plan. I've taken it worldwide. Yeah, international.
Oh, wow.
I've been taking the joy plan to America and... They like it.
That's your key audience.
That's my key audience. That kind of joyful positivity is what everyone loves.
Enforced joyful positivity.
I was running in Central Park last week, and it was the most joyful running experience ever. Like so many people, so many runners, so many cyclists, just lapping for
it's
joy.
A good, it's a hotbed that park. It's kind of because I guess that in London or you know most cities, there's kind of like alternatives. In the UK, you know, you can kind of do this park or this. But certainly in London, there's a few. You were lucky to have some green spaces. But that feels Central Park feels like it.
It was where if I was going to host a joy plan event, that's where I'd do it. Because honestly, like I think it's because you have to stop and cross the road every 10 seconds, don't you, when you're trying to run in New York because of the like blocks. I think it's where people go. But it felt like I was in a race. It was so great.
I'll tell you, someone else who likes running for joy, as well as medals, is our guest of the week.
Guest of the week, here in the studio. Guest of the week, sometimes on the phone. Could be an athlete, could be a physio, or a complete unknown.
Cadina Cox, welcome to the Runner's World podcast. I was actually looking through your CV and I think if anyone wants to feel like an underachiever, they should look at what you've achieved in your life. I think I'm right in saying four-time Olympian. You won golds in both cycling and running, which doesn't happen very often. You're a Lululemon ambassador. And also, thrillingly, you were 2021 Celebrity MasterChef champion. So just an amazing, amazing amount of strings to your bow.
I guess so. When people say like that, I'm like, oh, really? Is that me? Yeah.
What is it like... When I mean, it's the same question we ask all Olympians. Like we have loads on, but we have a few sometimes. What's it like winning an Olympic medal? Because can you describe that feeling? Is it is it the culmination of all the work, or is it the event itself? What's the sort of like leading emotion?
Do you know what? Sometimes like it's literally just relief.
Yeah.
You know when you like grafted for something like. It's a four-year cycle, so we literally spend like 4 years like grafting for this one big moment, and you could totally muck it up. Like you could be like literally like, you know, world number one and absolutely muck it up, or you could go in not as defending champion, or you know, as second in the world, and manage to step up on the day. And I've had it from various angles. Like Rio, I was kind of a nobody, so to speak, and you know, I was able to just turn up and do what I did. Tokyo was totally different because I was defending champion and there's then an expectation. So I think that one was more relief. I think Rio was more like, oh my God, I've just done this really cool thing. And Tokyo was like, thank goodness I managed to pull that off. Otherwise, that would be a little bit awkward.
Yeah, I mean, that's, yeah, 4 year cycles is kind of, I mean, we all get stressed about training blocks that last about 3 months. So, I mean, 4 years is quite a long time.
Yeah. Five if you count the extra year we had to have.
Yes, of course. Do you have any time off when you're doing that? I mean, I say time off, it's not like, but it, how do you manage the sort of like the training load with these blocks? Because you can't just be like peak fitness for 4 years.
No, oh, definitely not. Imagine that. I'd be like some unreal machine. No, like, so yeah, we do it like, so obviously you've got, it's really weird for me because obviously I've got two seasons of like two different sports that kind of run back to back. So we always have an off seasons, like in athletics, you kind of, your off seasons like through the winter. So like from like October-ish and through till the indoor season, which some people starts like December, some people starts January. So you kind of have, yeah, that kind of block kind of before Christmas to like do like your off season kind of like training. And normally before that, people kind of end their season like end of August, September-ish. And then they'll have a couple of weeks off there. So like get like 4 weeks just to kind of chill and do non-athlete stuff. And then you get back into that off-season training. And then you kind of have your indoor season if you're doing that. And then you have a bit of another training block and then you're onto your outdoor season. If you throw in cycling, it doesn't quite work like that because my cycling season starts, or it starts kind of like January. So a bit similar to the indoor season, I guess, for athletics. But I mean, I do take a break because I do what I want, but it's quite hard because like a lot of like my training partners are like getting into like their like, you know, hard grinds when I'm like, I'm just gonna wind down for a little minute, you know, just because I've just finished the athletic season. Yeah, so it's challenging doing the two sports, but I do get some downtime. I'm always on holiday, like I love a little sun break, so I try take breaks where I can.
Yeah, absolutely.
And obviously you've got two sports, like how, which came first, how did you get into both, like a bit about that kind of journey?
So I mean, I, my mum says I ran at 7 months old. I walked 7 months old, but mum claims I ran. But I started athletics competitively when I was like 14, and then when I got on well in 2014 and became a Paralympian as opposed to an Olympian, I was then able to transfer across onto the GB team pretty quickly. So I started, I guess, at an elite level in 2015 for athletics, and pretty much started at the same time for cycling. I basically started cycling because I couldn't run because my balance was really bad after my MS diagnosis. And it was kind of just like a training tool. Like a lot of us in athletics use cycling as cross training, so like I was just doing that thinking it was like, you know, a really helpful smart thing to do. Turns out I was actually quite good at it, so I ended up getting sent to British Cycling, doing a bit of testing, and got straight onto program with them. So yeah, 2015 I basically ended up on two British programs, which I was initially told couldn't happen. There was like a rule around it that you couldn't be like elite and on two different programs, and then yeah, I feel like I broke the barrier on that one, and now quite a few people do it.
Yeah, it's extraordinary to win, yeah, medals or win golds at the same Olympics in different disciplines. I mean, we often in running, there's that kind of talk about Emil Zatopek and how he won gold in 5,000, 10,000 metres and the marathon. But I think to win it in different sports is even more extraordinary because it's, the training required is obviously very different for each one.
Yeah, like it is challenging. And I think, you know, as I've gotten older, I've realised how hard it is. And also as like, you know, Paralympic sport moves on quite quickly. I mean, sport in general moves on quite quickly, but Paralympic sport moves on quite quickly. You've got youngsters coming through, you've got technology changing and things like cycling, like technology changes quite often. And I think, you know, when you're trying to defend titles and trying to, you know, it's small margins after that for me, like being at the top of my game, it then becomes really, really hard. And I'm such an injury prone athlete that just trying to stay in one piece is hard. So yeah, doing two sports, you know, fatigue levels are high. I have MS and my fatigue levels are high anyway. And you're trying to do, like, essentially use the same muscles, but in two different ways. So really it shouldn't work. You know, it's a bit of a challenge trying to balance it. I literally just had a meeting with my new cycling coach and like my larger support team to try figure out how we were going to move forward for the next 2 years and get to the next Paralympic Games in a good place. Figuring it all out. And my new coach was a bit like, oh, this is interesting, because obviously he's not like had to deal with an athlete that doesn't know a sport. He's like, okay, I'm just a cycling coach. But he's really open to it, which is great. He's just like, okay, I just need to think about these little things.
As far as training with MS, Kadina, so if people aren't that familiar with the condition, like what are some of the challenges around trying to be an elite athlete but having MS, and what are some of the kind of considerations that you need to make when training?
Yeah, so like one of the major things with MS is fatigue. So I struggle massively with fatigue. So a lot of the time I don't really have the best social life. Like I spend a lot of time basically napping, just trying to like catch up on like any recovery I can. So I kind of base my life on what's called the spoon theory, and it essentially says you have 10 spoons in a day. Like you can get up and, you know, it'll take you two spoons to shower. You know, if you have to do the dishes, it's going to take like another spoon. Like if you've got to walk the dog, that's another two spoons. Training, I normally like, yeah, that's something like 5 or 6 spoons. Like, so like that's half my spoons to go on a day. And like you can take spoons from tomorrow, but that means you're going to be impacted tomorrow because then you've only got like 8 spoons. So like that's how I kind of look at my fatigue. So it's always a balancing up with the fatigue. But then I get really bad like muscle spasms, which then can like impact like my training. So if I'm like, you know, doing like cycling stuff, it can be dangerous. Like if I'm having spasms and I can't control the bike. The same if, you know, I'm in the gym or if I'm doing running. You know, it's easy to pick up injuries when you're like not in control of your body so well. I have limited sensation in my feet. So the only sensation I have in my feet is I have like tingling sensations. So it's like really extreme pins and needles, which has then been dampened down by medication. So I now have like this. Do you know like if you like kind of like was sat on your leg for ages and then you stand up and you've got like this tingling? That's kind of what I've got like all the time, and that's my sensation. So when I'm like, if you've ever had that feeling when you like touch it, like you get that weird like feedback when you're like touching. So that's my feedback on the ground. Reduced, like I say, by medication. But then it means like, you know, when you're running, you kind of know where you're placing your feet, whereas I've got that sensation and no proprioception. So actually learning how to like place my feet and know where I'm hitting the ground can sometimes be like a real challenge. So it's just a lot of it's muscle memory, thanks to having ran before. But like, yeah, that can be a real challenge. And when my coach is like, do this, do that, and I'm like, I thought I was.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, like sometimes it's like really having to like work with like my coaches to make sure they're like giving me the right feedback so I can then figure out where I need to be.
Yeah.
I like the spoons though. I'm going to have to start.
Oh, me too.
A great Brilliant. Way of judging the day. I'm going to have to start doing that. That sounds really useful because you do. I mean, you know, everyone's managing effort and load and recovery and all those sorts of things. So I'm going to start questioning how many spoons I'm using up. Yeah. I like that a lot.
It's cool. Like when you like look at like things, you're like, oh, do I actually need to do that? Like yesterday, my dishes really needed doing, but I was like, don't have the energy, so they're going to stay till tomorrow.
Great. I love that excuse. I'm going to use that now as well. I mean, your route into the sport was probably a little bit different in the fact that you sort of competed before your diagnosis and all those things. But what are the biggest hurdles in terms of accessibility to para sport that people face?
I think depending on the sport that you do, it can be cost. I am a real advocate for getting people from different backgrounds, whether it's ethnic backgrounds, whether it's kind of getting more females involved, getting more disabled people involved in cycling, just because cycling is such an expensive sport. Like when I got my first bike, I had to fundraise to get my first bike. And you know, luckily once I got on program, I was, you know, fully supported, but like prior to that, it's really hard to try get involved in a sport if you don't have, you know, the family support or like the support that from yourself. So that is a challenge. Also, like just accessibility to facilities can sometimes be, you know, a real problem. It's obviously improving, but like, you know, I know a lot of my friends that are wheelchair users that can, you know, turn up to places and like not be able to get in because like it's just not accessible. Most Paralympians were just, I don't know, I feel like Paralympians are like cut from a different breed. So once you like, once you spent enough time around Paralympians, you realize we just like, I remember, and this is obviously not totally sport related at all, but I remember getting to a club with a rower who's a wheelchair user, and it was like this dingy club that was like down in a basement and there was like a load of stairs, and literally we got to the entrance and she was just like, "Oi," and just got one of the guys to like flip her over her shoulder, and then someone grabbed the wheelchair and
Great.
Brought her down into the club.
Yeah, she wasn't missing out. Quality.
Great. That's quality.
But that's it, like, but it's a little bit different when you're like, this was after like 2016 and we were all celebrating. But yeah, like when you're trying to get into like facilities just to be able to train, like that's, it's a real problem. Like in athletics, you've got, you know, racing chairs that are expensive. You've got to be able to find that, like if you're a thrower, you've got to find a throwing frame. And even people in the sport find it hard to get throwing frames. And then it's then just knowing where to go. Like I remember, so I'm a physio as well. And I was working with a young girl who was, she had a spina bifida and was just kind of figuring out, she was quite young. So she's kind of figuring out, you know, what she was going to do with herself. And she just started having to use a wheelchair more often. Like she'd used like a frame for a while and she was kind of not feeling comfortable using a wheelchair. And I was trying to like help her, and I was like, well, maybe try sport. And like her and her mum just didn't know how to get into like any sport. And he was just lucky I was the physio at that time, so I was able to be like, I know this, blah blah blah, but that's because I was involved in like Paralympic sport anyway. But like they just didn't know how to go about it. And I think, you know, not knowing is sometimes the thing. I think London 2012 has obviously helped massively with like moving things forward and having that support. But like there's so many different barriers, and as much as it's improving, it's still like, I feel like London 2012 like gave us a massive boom, and then it kind of has like halted a little bit. So it's just kind of keeping that momentum going, because it is a challenge like when you do have a disability.
What, like how is your training, how is your training going this year? What are you currently training for, and how's everything going on that kind of perspective?
Really awkward question. It's not.
I am.
So I mean, I nearly missed the games last year through the same injury. So I've got really bad Achilles tendonitis in both Achilles, which is, yeah, it's not ideal. So last year I spent like 3 months unable to run. So I literally had like 5 weeks of training before the Paralympics. So I'm impressed with how well I did. I give myself a pat on the back for that one.
But
like this year, I think I got 3 sessions into training. Then I had a quad issue, which lasted like 5 weeks. And then when that kind of eased up, my Achilles on the right side flared up. And I was just like, this is not the time. I'm trying to like, you know, get some qualifications done here. And then the left one just wanted to join the party, so that flared up a couple of weeks ago. And off the back of that, I tore my calf racing 2 weeks ago. So currently, I'm just rehabbing. So I've got the next kind of 4 weeks of rehab, and kind of see where the rest of the season leaves me. I've got Cycling World Championships in October, which I'm really looking forward to. I lost my world title in 2020. But obviously then retained my Tokyo Paralympic title. So it would be nice to claim back the world title as well this year. So that's kind of a really big aim for me. And yeah, I'm not really sure like what I'm doing running wise, because like I say, I've literally just like started rehabbing my soleus tear. So that's a process, guys.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and it's a matter of like I guess it's like reframing, isn't it? So it's like, okay, that's not a goal this year, this is my goal instead. And how, like, is that really challenging when, I guess I'm trying to think, like, from if I got injured before a marathon, I'd be like, okay, well, I'll do this instead, and that's fine. But when you're an athlete, that's your life. Like, how easy is it to kind of be like, okay, I'm going to put that on the back burner and focus on this for now?
Yeah, it's hard. Like really hard. I've really struggled. It's, I think when you've like, you set, like you have, like I say, we work on 4 year cycles, and you have like, you know, championships that you're aiming for, and you know, you're trying to qualify for this championship and do this. And I think you just become like, it just becomes like it, that is your life and that's so normal. And I've never not qualified for a championships. So I'm now like in this bizarre position where I'm like, oh my God, that's not happened. And because it's not happened before, I find it really hard to be like, okay, I'm not doing that championships. Like, and like really being like, okay, like, no, I'm actually not doing that. And because like, I've literally planned already, like doing that championship, like, you know, how it's going to work, like my training up until that point, my year up until that point, and like I haven't like got working, like I've turned down work, you know, focusing on like doing championships. And then you're like, okay, now I have to refigure like a good, like, you know, 3-4 months out, which I didn't, you know, kind of plan for. And now I'm rehabbing instead, which is also quite it can be quite like, I don't know, like rehab is sometimes harder than normal training, and it can be quite, you know, draining and a bit demoralizing, you know, especially like mid-season. Like I literally got injured at the beginning of the season, which is just rough. And then you've got to watch, like, you know, all your like competitors like competing, like your teammates. And, you know, it's, as much as I find it exciting, like I love athletics, so I still like get like an absolute buzz just by watching people. But it's rough, like, you know, when you want to be competing. So yeah, there's part of the time when I'm like, oh, I actually don't want to watch. So like, I won't watch like races I should be in. Like, I'll just like watch people. Like, I'm like, yay, and support the team. But you know, if you see me literally on a sun lounger for a lot of this summer, it's because I just need to get away from the world of sport. And be like, I'm just gonna have like a good sunbathe, because it is rough. But like, luckily, like I've got the two sports, which makes it a little bit easier to be able to reframe and be like, okay, this is my goal. And also, like, because we're like 2 years out from the next Paralympics, I've been able to go, actually, like the last 2 years, I've basically just had injury after injury back to back to back. And I'm like, now actually I've got plenty of time. Like, if I don't compete in athletics for the rest of the season, my next major championships in athletics isn't until next summer. So between like kind of for the next 12 months, all I've got is the Cycling World Championships. So I can, you know, focus on that and also focus on just rebuilding my body. So I'm really robust so that I go into the next Paralympic Games, which again, you know, talking 4 year cycles, that's the major goal. So I can get into that and be, you know, in the best shape of my life and not be falling to pieces, which is basically what I am at the moment. I'm held together by tape.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm gonna flip this now because we talked about the injury, but the positives of sport in your life, firstly the sort of physical side. I mean, how. And you talked about how you've been a physio and you're, you know, recommending sport as part of treatment for people with different conditions. How much has sport helped you in the management of your condition? And you know, like, it's anecdotal, but, you know, people who maybe have MS but don't exercise and how their condition behaves. And you know, you've got to be an advocate for kind of like keeping moving, right? Like, that's got to be such an important part of it all.
Yeah, no, obviously, I'm like, literally like, guys, decent sport. but no, it's a bizarre one because like when I was diagnosed, like I was studying at the time, and one of the first modules I came back onto was my neuro module, which had MS as, you know, one of the conditions. And kind of not long before that, so I was diagnosed like 8 years ago. So not long before that, kind of the recommendation was that you didn't do any sport, like physical activity was like a no-no. because it could, like, you know, you're exerting yourself, so you know, creating that fatigue, and it could stress you out, which could create a relapse. So it was kind of like, no, don't do any physical activity. And then that's really flip turned, and it's like, no, like, get into physical activity, it's really beneficial for you physically. So for me, like, I was like, my balance was so bad, like, before, well, when I was diagnosed. So I, the first things I got back into was, I did like weight training. So like, just to be able to like with that proprioception things, and like just strengthening the muscles, so they were able to have better control. Like, I was doing, like, I got back into like back squatting pretty quickly, which, like, the fact that I could barely walk without falling over, but I could back squat was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And then, like, yeah, just doing, like, you know, like simple movements, like a squat. And then we'd, like, you know, like, do deadlifts, and then we moved on to like being able to do like lunges and split squats, all with like assistance in the beginning, because honestly I was a hazard to myself. But then I did Pilates, again, hazard to myself. Like, I spent a lot of time on the floor, but I had a really good like yoga and Pilates instructors, which like really helped with like the adaptations, and that really helped with like my balance and my proprioception, which allowed me to be able to get back into running, because genuinely, like, I would literally take two steps and be on the floor. And without, you know, having done that in like yoga and Pilates, and then that strengthening work in like doing like gym work, I would never have been able to, you know, get back in. And then just like being able to do like cycling just allowed me to build like a tolerance to just being able to walk more, you know, like, you know, just having that like extra reserves in my body. Like, when I had training, so like my reserve was higher than what it would have been if I was detrained. So I always say it's really beneficial, but like, so I did my my dissertation on the effects of physical activity on children with cerebral palsy, because it's something I'm really passionate about. When I went to the Paralympics, and I kind of saw like the different disabilities, like, in this country we are really lucky with kind of the support we have, like in the healthcare sector, which allows, like, you know, children born with impairments to be able to have the best kind of shot. And there's a lot of impairments we don't get because of kind of, I guess, like not being like a third world country, you know, having like clean, like, you know, water, and, you know, all those little bits and pieces that means they're unfortunate and, you know, have all these other conditions we don't get. But that meant, like, you know, going to the Paralympics the first time, I was like blown away by all these conditions I'd never seen before. But then what sport had given them back was just so amazing. Like, seeing how people could, like, you know, move their body and like use their body and still be like really like happy and content, and like mentally like really like happy, but like physically doing stuff that I bet that their physios and their occupational therapists are like, you're never going to be able to do that. You know those ones, like when they're like, parents told, oh, your child's never going to be able to do that. But like, then I'm like sat at the Paralympics thinking, wow, like, how on earth? And honestly, it just blew my mind. And as a physio, I was like, okay, this is what I want to do. I want to be able to make that difference in a child's life. And I think physical activity, like sport, like that, can do that for a child. So, you know, and then you take that into older life, or you're like me and you know, you get diagnosed later in life. And again, it can be used. Like, for me, I was in such a low place, and the only way I managed to get out of that hole was by having the goal of getting back to sport. And mentally, it was just what got me through. Like, physically, it gives you the happy hormones. Like, everyone knows about the happy hormones. So you get that, and then like just having a goal and being able to, you know, tick those goals off. Like, you guys know what it's like, you know, when, you know, you hit a target, like, you're buzzing. It's just those little things. So I'm literally like, guys, get involved in any form of physical activity. It is fabulous.
Oh, that's
for you.
Great. That's great to hear that. Can I ask you about technology? Because we often talk about it. People who come on, and I wonder about the role that maybe shoe technology plays in Paralympic sport as well. You mentioned being injured with Achilles problems. Are these new shoes that are in there, are they helpful when it comes to managing injury, or do they kind of exacerbate it?
I think it depends on, like, you know, what shoes, like, you work with. Like, I've found like different shoes work for me, like different, like with me with my Achilles issues, like, you know, comfort and stability is a real key thing, and, you know, technology is playing a massive role in that. And I work with Lulu and Emin, who have brought out this new Blissfield shoe, which was made for women, based on women rather than a men's shoe being turned into a women's shoe. And like, they've really looked at, like, you know, the athlete and the runner and how they can support, and, you know, the stability around the shoe, and kind of just allowing you to be able to run those miles, and, you know, be as comfortable as possible, and they feel like you're literally like running on a cloud. And they've been really helpful for me, like, you know, just when I've needed to offload my calf a little bit, and, you know, just walking, you know, around a little bit. Like, they've been really like great, like, you know, in being able to offload that little bit. But then you look at like the technology of like running spikes right now, there's this kind of whole like new like wave of carbon like plates that are like really changing the game, and I can like, you know, attest to the fact that they are really changing the game. Like, I ran PBs or season best last year that were massive, which I didn't think I'd be able to do, and you see people just absolutely flying in these new season. It is a real like, it's a big thing now. Like, for me, it's bizarre because in cycling, like, technology, like, it is the sport. Like, you know, like your bike and like your kit, like, it's a massive thing. Like, I've had like carbon shoes, like I got fully carbon shoes, like molded carbon shoes, and we have like carbon bikes and cranks and the wheels, like, it's like, that's a whole thing. But like, yeah, it's only just coming into athletics. So everyone's getting excited, like, oh my god, we've got these carbon shoes. And I'm like,
yeah,
oh my god,
come on, running, yeah,
got these carbon shoes.
Like, old news.
Keep it moving. But yeah, like, it's making such a difference. Like, you'll see, obviously, like at the games last year, you know, world records were just like dropping, and hopefully you'll see the same this year, because that technology is keeping to move on, and, you know, it's more accessible to, you know, everyone to be able to get them, and different brands are now like bringing it in. So I think it's just an exciting time for the sport of athletics.
Definitely, absolutely. Go for it, Jane.
So obviously you mentioned the Blissfield, that's where we met and we were catching up about how we both were obsessed with keeping our shoes clean, but I guess that's probably not one that our listeners care about. But you spoke about kind of exercising for your mental health a lot at this event, and how important it is for you to exercise for your mental health. And is that something that's kind of you kind of a really that obviously is really important to you? And I wonder if you could like chat a bit about it, because I found it really inspiring when you spoke about it at the event.
Yeah, no, it is. Like, I think for me, like, having, like I say, when I was diagnosed, I was in a really, really dark place. Since then, I've really struggled with different parts of like my mental health. So I really openly speak about the fact that I've got an eating disorder. Even though in some ways, you know, sport is detrimental, can be detrimental within an eating disorder, actually, for me, just that routine of still having like my sport to be able to do, and like, you know, being able to, like, I remember like when I was diagnosed with MS and I wasn't able to run, all I wanted to do was run and be in my happy place. And like, literally running is just like my happy place. Just like, I feel free. Like, you know, you can just like run for, I'm not going to say hours or miles, because I really don't do that, but like, I can run for like seconds. Like, yeah, I do reps, it's fine. But like, you literally can just like run and like, you know, I'm going fast, and I'm literally just like, you know, you've got the wind in your hair, like, you know, you're like, sometimes you're beating people, which is always good, or you're like running with like your group, and that's just like, it's really satisfying, you know, that, to be within that group, and, you know, just training together, like, it's like great, like bands. And all I wanted to was to be back in that place. And I think that's made me really appreciate what sport has given me, just like having gone through that experience and not really taking it for granted anymore. And I think like now, like, so I was actually speaking to my physio yesterday, and I was like, she was like, I think we just need to give you something to do, so you've got like routine, and like, you're like just a little bit like less anxious, and a little bit like, yeah, just like happier, just like able to like, you know, get on with like doing some training. Because like, for me, like, I just love like, you know, being involved in sport, and like, I'll just get miserable, like, you know, I get like stressed out about stuff and really anxious about stuff I don't need to be anxious about, like, if I can't like do sport. And I think for so many people it gives back so much. And like I say, with me, like, it was, you know, you have that goal, and I think when you're really struggling with your mental health, just having little goals and small wins can really help you, like, you know, have a focus and be on track and not be so like overwhelmed by what's kind of going on in your mental health headspace. And again, we speak about the happy hormones, like, you know, you get so much back by doing exercise, like when the endorphins and all the other good stuff is like released. And I think for me, I find that as well as kind of being able to, you know, help yourself personally. Like you find that sense of like community as well. And actually you could in that community, you can be helping and supporting someone else. And that actually then is really beneficial to you because that makes you feel better about you and what you're doing. So I think it's like, yeah, like it can be used in so many different ways. But for me, like without my sport, I'd kind of be so lost and just not be a happy, wholesome Kadena. Like yeah. I literally, I'd not done anything for like 3 days and I'm like itching. I'm like, yeah. Guys, I'm getting stressed out. I'm like trying to like walk my dog like extra.
We're going for a 9-hour walk. Come on.
She's literally the tiniest little dog. She's like cat size. She's a miniature Dachshund as well.
And what does it mean to be for you to be a Lululemon ambassador? What does the brand kind of mean to you, I guess?
I think one of the most important things to me about being a Lululemon ambassador is the fact that they're so inclusive and they're like forward moving and, you know, wanting to create change. The fact that they've got, you know, me on as a disabled black female, like that for me is, you know, great. And then like, you know, you'll see like, so I did a shoot with them and, you know, there was people, like, there were so many of us that looked different, but we was all there for one common goal of like, we like to run. And Lululemon just support that, like they're just supporting, you know, like great athletes, you know, great people that are involved in sport. Like it doesn't matter who you are or where you come from, like they support that. And then like they're just, their technology in their shoes, but then the technology in their clothing, like if you wore their Align pants, like, oh my God, like they're literally the comfiest things ever. Like you literally feel like you got a second skin on, like you look great. That was a massive thing for me. I was like, I just need to look great. Like I'm just here for like colors. Like I got a really boring jumper on today. It's literally just burgundy. Like I'm normally like, give me like bright colors, like blocky colors, which Lululemon do so well. And I think, yeah, they're just a great brand to work with, like really supportive, like, you know, getting into like different spaces. Like we all know what kind of where they started, like they were more like yoga, kind of like more like middle class. And they're really like, you know, wanting to diversify and move into different spaces. So, you know, working with me, working with an athlete, especially like the Europe brand, we haven't like, there's not been so much within like the elite sport kind of area. And like, yeah, working with me, a disabled athlete as well, is really a step in like a great direction. And they've just taken on two ambassadors in the US, one of them who is a fellow Paralympian, and his partner who is an up-and-coming long jumper. And it's just great to see, you know, that they're just so diverse. And that's one of the things that I really love about them, the fact that they're just so inclusive. But then they have me looking great.
Kadena, thanks so much for making the time to come on the Runners World podcast and talk to us about all the things that are important to you. And we wish you all the best with cycling and running in the future. Amazing stuff. And thank you again for your time.
Oh, no, thank you guys for having me on. It's been great to chat to you.
Enjoy those holidays.
Yeah, enjoy the holiday. Enjoy the sunbathing.
And then I was literally booking holidays while on holiday.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runners World podcast. A huge thanks to our guest, Kadena Cox, and to you, of course, for listening.
You can once again subscribe to 3 issues of Runners World for just £5. Head to hearstmagazines.co.uk/runnersworldpodcast to get this exclusive listener offer.
And you can listen to the Runners World podcast on Acast, iTunes, all your favourite podcast apps. Just search Runners World UK and subscribe. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavourless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
This message comes from BOF sponsor eBay. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee. And you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, or sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. eBay gets it. So look for the blue check mark next to that thing you love and be confident that every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is checked by experts. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.